to order. And thank you, members, for coming. We have three bills that we'll be hearing this morning, and one of them we'll start out on the list with Senate File 2921. Senator Erickson Ropes, we'll take you first, and this is actually a bonding request, and was not picked up when we were doing our bonding proposals. It was a late introduction, I believe, but we did hear Senator Rosen's proposal, which is, I believe, almost identical to this. It's the Cooperative Facilities Grant proposal, and it's a proposal that relates to facilities. So what we'll do with this is we'll hear this, and then this will be added to the recommendation that went over to the Capital Investment Committee, and then Senator Langseth will pick it up in his committee. So welcome, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Superintendent Ehlers is passing out some green folders there. Thank you for allowing us some time to address your committee. We do have a late project, although really we've been dealing with this since August, but we've been trying to figure out a way to deal with our school facilities issues in Rushford. As you know, the August floods hit Rushford very hard, and we had quite a number of legislators come down and certainly inquire and ask, and we've been sending pictures around, but Rushford is the community that you remember that had their levee breached, not because of levee failure, but there were trees clogged up and water wound up pouring into the city. The city sewer plant was completely damaged, and that spilled raw sewage into the city. So basically, we had the city of Rushford sitting as a bowl with the levee encircling it, and once it was breached, all this water just sat in the community for 3 days, soaking everything, and then also a fertilizer plant in town burst. So we had fertilizer, raw sewage, and river water just steeping in the city of Rushford for several days. The school had some minimal damage to one corner of the school, and before that, we had lots of air quality issues anyway. The problem now is that it was an old building to begin with, and the superintendent and the rest of our friends here will talk in more detail, but the problem is trying to move to looking at funding a new school who's lost an incredible piece of its tax base. You know, so many of the homes were destroyed. People now are carrying double mortgages, and many of the homes have not even been rebuilt. We still have drywall that's ripped off and gutted houses down there, and those people are up to their ears in their own personal and family building projects, and to ask them at this critical time to pass a referendum is just an extreme hardship for that community. So we find ourselves before you today asking for your consideration. And with that, I'll turn it over to Superintendent Chuck Ehlers, who is brand new up from Iowa, so had just had his feet on the ground for a couple weeks and the floods rolled in. So he's getting an orientation from the ground level to the Capitol very quickly here. Superintendent Ehlers.
Thank you, Senator Ropes. We appreciate the opportunity to present our request here. I would like to introduce this morning, before I begin, our Vice Chairman of the Board of Education, Dan Munson, to my right. And also assisting us is Gary Olson from Ehlers & Associates, and he will share some information with you this morning in regards to the tax impact.
Excuse me, Superintendent, if you could just give your name for the record.
Please. Okay, my name is Chuck Ehler, Superintendent at Rushford-Peterson School District, and as Senator Ropes indicated to you, I started on my new job on July 9th, and I came from that country south of here called Iowa. Okay, and glad to be back. I'm actually a native of Minnesota. I took a 33-year sabbatical from the state of Minnesota, but I'm glad to be back here. One of the challenges facing us, obviously, is the fact that we were impacted by the flood. But I would like to take you through this morning before we concentrate or put any emphasis on that, just to make you aware of our current situation. So if you'd be kind enough to open your booklets up, and we have some pictures there that you can look at, and it talks about our current facilities. We do have some of the oldest facilities in the state of Minnesota. If you look at the picture on the top there that says present site, the large area with the large roof area that was constructed in 1906, and then the building just to the left of that was constructed in 1936, and then, of course, our gymnasium was built in 1970. 95% of our high school classes take place in the 1906 and 1936 structures. The 1906 structure received most of the damages from the flood, and it was not necessarily flood water that caused us most of our damages. Most of our damages came from backed up sewage. And at this point, the current costs that we've incurred are $711,000 to our building. And that's the loss of equipment to our athletic complex, as well as cleanup costs and reconstruction and repair costs and loss of school materials. As Senator Ropes clearly pointed out to you, we've had ongoing issues with our building, and you may ask, why are you coming forward now? The Board of Education has been well aware of the needs of the building. They are simply functionally not able to provide a quality and safe educational environment for our students. We do not meet ADA guidelines or recommended safety guidelines in our buildings. And for next year, we have space to accommodate and serve only 46% of our 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds. One of the impacts, largest impacts to our community is the loss of child care facilities. So our school district has taken on that responsibility. We currently do not have the necessary space to continue with that. And obviously the flood has exposed lots of structural as well as environmental issues in our building. And we have made huge strides to address those to the best of our abilities. And we have worked with many health organizations as well as IEA representatives to assist us in that effort. And as Senator Ropes clearly pointed out to you, the community of Rushford has experienced substantial business as well as housing losses. Estimates on houses, 700 homes were impacted by the flood, and out of that, 100 will be either torn down or completely dismantled. Our free and reduced rates, you can see that last year they were in the 37% area. This year they've climbed to 58%. And Gary Olson is here this morning to discuss with you the tax in-base, and we'll share that with you in just a few minutes. Our rationale and reason for asking for a new school is that it will provide a foundation for long-term sustainability of our school district and our communities. We will be supporting our businesses and creating new jobs and attracting new industries and families. It will be an economic boost to our local and state economies, and we'll be able to utilize the current low interest rates. Green space and safer access are two things that we would like to see provided to our school, and we feel that in addition to that, we will also be able to provide age-appropriate learning environments. We anticipate increased community usage as well as new learning opportunities for students in early childhood through 12th grade as well as adults. And all of those are necessary for us to meet the changing the academic standards of the future. On page 2, you'll notice the analysis of tax impact, and I'm going to turn that over this morning to Gary Olson from Ehlers Associates.
Mr. Olson?
Good morning. I'm Gary Olson with Ehlers and Associates. If you turn to page 2 there, we did run several scenarios for them. The first one, to the far right, $25 million would be the approximate cost with no help from the state other than debt equalization aid. And then we kind of worked our way down based on some kind of additional levels of help, either from the federal government or the state government or grants or whatever, those kinds of things. But if you look at the far right-hand column and you look at the $25 million, if the district were to issue bonds for $25 million over 20 years, the tax rate would be approximately 53.45%. If you look at taxes payable 2007 for school districts in Minnesota, the highest rate was just under 49. And if you looked at what was the median rate, there's about 340 districts, so you had about 170 above and 170 below, the tax rate would be about 11.5%, which is more consistent with that far left-hand column, the $5 million option. So you can see, just for illustrative purposes, if you look at, on the left-hand side, you see residential homesteads, $100,000. If you go all the way out and they were to issue all $25 million of bonds locally, after debt equalization aid, the tax impact would still be $535 per year on a $100,000 home. If we were able to drop that down to $5 million, then it would drop all the way down to $116 per home. You can also see the impact on commercial industrial property, agricultural homesteads, and just raw land, agricultural dollars per acre, varying across a number of things. The one thing to note is that if you look at a homestead, ag homestead, let's say the $600,000 homestead, the footnote at the bottom, what that assumes is that the house, garage, and 1 acre is $100,000 and the rest of the farm land and buildings is $500,000. And that's important because the house, garage, and 1 acre is taxed differently than the remainder of the farm. The house, garage, and 1 acre is taxed just like a residential homestead. The next up to $790,000 of agricultural property that's homesteaded is taxed at a lower rate.
Thank you, Gary. If any members of the committee here would have any questions for him, he'd be happy to answer those now. If not, we will continue forward. If you'll look on page 3 of our folder, we have a picture in there of our middle school, which is located in Peterson. Our plan is to continue utilizing that facility. Our sports complex is also shown on the picture below. And all of that area was put together by donations throughout the community. On page 4 shows our current structures, and you can look those over at your convenience with the years on there. The facility in Rushford houses early childhood through 5th grade, as well as grades 9 through 12, and our grades 6, 7, and 8 are at the Peterson Center. On page 5, if you'll just take a moment to look at that with me, please, and I would ask that you concentrate on the last three items there, safety issue. Obviously, that's one of our major concerns for our students as well as families in our community. Our high school and elementary facility is currently located on Highway 43, which is a main highway that runs through the center of town, and our students must cross that highway both in the mornings and afternoon, as well as any time that we need to access our athletic complex. So we have safety concerns for our students as well as staff and family members. Air quality issues. Senator Ropes pointed out to you earlier this morning that this has been an ongoing issue for our school district, and we have had, as I indicated, many health organizations and experts there to assist us. We were successful in getting a clean bill of health. We were flooded on August 19th and were able to open school the following Tuesday, following Labor Day. So we were very fortunate in that effort, and that was thanks mainly to a large number of volunteers and people that came to our aid and rescue and helping us get the building ready. Accessibility issues in our building. The high school does not currently meet ADA guidelines. The elevators are at different areas and levels of the school. This placement does not facilitate easy access to the various levels that people must go to. Handicapped accessibility in the bathroom is not compliant with ADA guidelines. There are no sinks present in the elementary school classrooms. There are no bathrooms on second and third floor in our buildings. And the stairwells and hallways are narrow and do not meet ADA guidelines. And as of yesterday, the state of Minnesota has obtained a new lake. As you know, Minnesota is known as the land of 10,000 lakes. We now have 10,001. One of them is sitting on our school roof and currently leaking inside of our building. So we're happy to share that information with you this morning. We've also included on page 6 for you that data about our enrollment. It indicates from 2005 through 2011, those are projected. So our enrollment is going to remain quite stable. And so we're pleased to share that information with you this morning. We've also included for you on page 7 a map of our school district so you have an idea of the area that we take in southeastern Minnesota. And the very last page is a picture that was taken with our school district and our buildings out in front. This was taken approximately at 8 o'clock on Sunday morning, August 19th. It indicates to you, as Senator Ropes shared with you, the area behind the school is known as Rush Creek. Most of the time, you can walk across that creek without getting yourself wet up to the knees. And so you can. This gives you a visual impact of the area that was impacted by the flood. The smoke in the left-hand column is a house that is burning that was pushed off of its foundation, and there was nothing they could do with it. I would be happy to entertain any questions you may have. If not, I will take this opportunity, Mr. Chairman and members of the K-12 or Early Childhood Finance Committee, Budget Committee here. Thank you for your time. I would like to have Vice Chair Dan Munson just say a few words this morning.
Thank you, Superintendent. Mr. Munson.
Hi, Daniel Munson, Vice Chairman of the Board of Education, Rushford-Peterson School District. I just want to say that this is not something new, that the Board of Education has been aware of the need for new facilities for some time. We did attempt a referendum in 2002, which failed. If you ask 20 people why, you're going to get 20 different answers. But it is certainly something that we've been aware of, the need for a new facility. And, of course, when the flood hit the Rushford area, what it did was certainly make us more aware of some of the problems with our facilities. And at the same time that we now see more reason why we need new facilities, we've reduced the tax base at the same time here. And so we're in a sort of a double indemnity here. We have a serious problem and yet no way to really combat it within our own district.
Okay. Thank you. Just a couple questions. You mentioned there was a referendum in 2002. Could you give us the amount that you were seeking at that time?
I'm afraid I don't know. I was not on the board at that time.
Okay. They were seeking $18 million at that time.
Okay. $18 million. And what is the primary economy in Rushford? Is that agricultural?
Well, agriculturally based, yes.
So it's not really a bedroom community of, you know.
Winona sits 20 miles to the north, so we are somewhat a little bit of a bedroom community. La Crosse is 40 miles to the east, and Rochester is 40 miles to the west. So we're kind of in between.
Okay. Just a second here.
Mr. Chair, I would also say that they do have a little bit of a diverse business base. However, within the last several years, one of the largest employers in town, RTP, closed, and I think they moved their business to Mexico, and that was a huge economic shock for the city. And when Rushford and the whole southeastern area is trying to get back on its feet after the flood, they're trying to attract people to the community, and there's some exciting new initiatives going on here. However, as you know, one of the first things that families look at, in addition to employment opportunities, is what does the school look like? And it's just really difficult to put together a diverse economic package and a recovery, long-term recovery package, when your school is really struggling and we've lost tax base to support school bonding projects.
Okay. Senator Olson?
Don't you have a LEFSA factory down there?
Yes, we do.
I've been there.
Well, thank you, yes.
Even if I'm not Norwegian, I'm Swedish. But
I have to say, that really is the best LEFSA around. And I tend to think of myself as a LEFSA expert growing up in northern Minnesota. But they were completely flooded out and really struggled for a while with I mean, that's, you know, we laugh a little bit about it, but, you know, that's a really, the core question is, here's a small-town business that was doing very well.
Are they going back into business?
They are coming back.
They're not currently operational, but their intent, by all means, is to come back.
By the holidays.
Yes.
Let's hope so.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious on your steady enrollment. Are you plus or minus on open enrollment?
Thank you for that question.
And Superintendent?
Before I answer that, allow me to share with you as well. We did lose 19 students because of the flood. And so the state was kind enough, when they put their package together, is to make sure that we receive funding for those students. Currently, the data that I had gathered from last year was that we had 85 students that opened and rolled out, and we had 35 students coming back in, so we had a net loss of 55 students due to open enrollment. One of the efforts that I immediately embraced was contacting each one of the families that chose not to send their students to our school, so we did reduce that by approximately 8 to 10 students, so we're right now, this year, we're at 40, a net loss of 40.
And then a follow-up, Senator Mr. Chair, thank you. Just curious, and you may have touched on it, are there parts of the building because of the flood now that you're not using?
That's a very fair question. We were just fortunate a week ago from last Thursday, we were able to finally move our last classroom back. It was an elementary vocal music class that was on the lower level, and we have finished the reconstruction phase, and by the time we got all the necessary permits and clearances to go ahead and use the facility again, it took that long to get everything back in place. So we are currently now fully functional and utilizing all of the areas.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to ask, I'm just trying to look at the property tax impact here that you talked about at the beginning. What types of home values, what's the range of home values in the community? Or in the district, does anyone?
Well,
Superintendent,
I can answer that. There, obviously, in some of the areas that were impacted, the values of those homes of current, obviously, this is going to be pre-flood. They would have averaged anywhere from the $55,000 to $150,000 range, and there are some homes that are in excess of that range. That would be $150,000 to $250,000 range.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator Anderson.
I'm just curious. I know there was a lot of delay in getting flood relief dollars to the community. Are you getting most of that assistance by now in Rushford? Do you know?
Well, I can speak on behalf of what I know on the school district. As I told you, our losses are going to be in excess of $700,000. To date, we've received $100,000 in relief. So we're looking for six more checks in that amount. So anytime they come, we'll be happy to take those. But from the other standpoint, from the economic standpoint, there is some progress that's being made, and it has been a slow, but the progress, and I think Senator Ropes will support this as well, it has picked up, and that there is positive progress being made. We have a long ways to go yet.
Okay. Senator Ropes.
Senator Anderson, yes, I would say it's slow, but we are moving forward a step at a time. It's certainly not the overwhelming show of support that I was expecting to see on the streets from the state. It's moving very slowly, but things are starting to trickle down there now. I do believe that Senator Langseth brought up in one of his committees last week a bit of shock about some of the bonding money that only $1 million has hit the ground there, many millions that we appropriated on the project. So it's just a very tedious and slow experience. So we're moving forward, but not really quickly.
Senator Salzman.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Olson, could you tell me on the $20 million project, what is the annual debt service? What is the annual payment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Salzman. On the $25 million, the debt service annual levy would be just over $2 million, because that's the principal and interest plus 5%. Of that, the state aid under the debt equalization formula would be about $160,000, and the rest would fall onto the property taxpayers. And the reason for that is essentially, you have to get above 25% of your value before you qualify for any aid, because the equalization in the first tier is their value is higher than that. So that gobbles up about $1.2 million of that levy. So you have about $800,000 left. And of that $800,000 that's left, they get about just under 20% of that as state aid. So really what they're getting is about just under 8% of the debt service payment being paid for by debt equalization aid.
Senator Salzman. Right.
So just some, I guess to address the fact that we went down to Kingsland with the Education Policy Committee earlier this year and heard a story of a community that went out for years and years to fund their local schools. And I just raise this because here we have this community with facilities that are in great need, and we're not really helping at all at this point in time to help. So we have existing public schools. And yet, if this was a charter school, you could essentially fill out some paperwork and go for lease aid and perhaps build a facility across the street, you know, to compete with the public school, and yet we're not helping them the same way. And I just raise that as part of a larger policy discussion of how do we provide equity on our facilities to our, you know, traditional public schools, and obviously charter schools are, but there's a public engagement here. And I am troubled by the fact that in communities across Minnesota we hear stories of facilities that are aging. And how can we assist them to have the facilities that are needed to educate our children, and yet also look at how we're using our lease aid and having public input in that as well? So I just see this as another example of, I'm not sure what the answer is in terms of a larger policy, but I think that you have a very compelling case of coming to the state and asking for assistance.
Thank you, Senator Salzman.
Senator Salzman, Senator Rosen had a similar situation. I think her school district wasn't able to pass a referendum that they had attempted a number of times. And as was mentioned, the equalization aid hasn't kept up with the inflated land prices real estate prices. And I think last year in the Senate tax bill, actually, you know, we'd been working, this committee had been working with the tax, Senator Bach, we were trying to update those, that equalization aid, so that it would better reflect what's going on out there in terms of the values, which, I mean, that's probably not the complete answer to what you're bringing up, but I think we haven't done a very good job in terms of staying current in many of those equalization factors. Senator Salzman.
And you're right, Mr. Chair, as well as the fact that when we have school districts that are in declining enrollment or stable, again, if we were to go to those communities and try to pass a debt service levy for a facility, the public would ask why those school districts are going to the public to ask for a facility, and yet we're providing state dollars to, you know, potentially build charter facilities. And I just question that as a subject for further discussion.
Mm-hmm. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, right now charter facilities aren't allowed to own their building, so it generally isn't used toward, you know, building new structures. They can lease a building and get some. It's usually not of the magnitude of what the public, regular full-blown public facility requires. So it's a little hard to compare there, but it's still a worthy topic of discussion, particularly as it pertains to whether that mechanism and whether that should be available to on a larger scale, or how we break the logjam when the needs are quite so evident. Yes. And yet the challenge of getting that local approval seems insurmountable.
Senator Scogin?
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious, is this breaking new ground, or have we done this in the past? Or
Senator Scogin, no, there is a current program in place, but it doesn't have any. What this proposal is seeking to do is to tap into the existing program that's Cooperative Facilities Grant, which was put in place, I believe Senator Rosen was the one that had the bill 2 years ago.
Mr. Chairman and members, we have a program that was previously called the Cooperative Secondary Facilities Grant, and this committee adopted and ultimately became law through the Education Finance Bill last year. The elimination of the secondary and the financial requirements were doubled. So previously you could only have a $10 million loan under this program, and now it's 20, and that's why we're seeing two bills this year that are at the $20 million level. But the program is quite old, but each year, if a school district wants to apply under this program, they do have to go through the bonding process. So that's why you're being asked to review this and being sent to the Capital Investment Committee. It's not common, but it's not unheard of either.
I think the rural districts that are in relatively old condition and I'd say relatively smaller districts in terms of population have some real struggles because the you don't quite know whether you want to make the investment if the district is declining and put that load on the local taxpayers or the local property. On the flip side, you don't really want, you know, the community is really centered around the schools, and that's kind of the, in many of those smaller communities, and I probably in Rushford as well, they're probably one of the larger employers in the city.
We are.
And so that a lot of it hinges around that school, and you're not going to have a lot of people moving into a district or a community that doesn't have a school. So, I mean, you got this kind of a double-edged sword. You want to have viability in those communities, and yet you don't want to make a foolish investment that, you know, a few years down the road might end up being vacated or maybe the district's consolidated with another district or something. So it is difficult. And I think that same problem exists with the operational costs in smaller districts. And we haven't been able to get a handle on that. And I'm hoping that maybe within the next, couple of weeks, we can have a discussion in here about what was originated, or there's a booklet out called Minnesota's Promise, which is where should we go in the next few years in terms of our education system in the state, and try to get all of us kind of sit around and talk about that vision, where we want to see our education system be in a few years down the road. And then I'm hoping that we can talk about the difficulties with some of these rural districts. A couple days ago or a few days ago, we had the discussion about transportation out there. And in some cases, you had numerous buses kind of going out and competing for students from other districts. And there's the facilities issue, which is a big issue. If you don't have facilities, in the case of you and Senator Rosen, I mean, those pictures that she showed, it was really deplorable that students would even want to be inside a building like that. So these are issues. Also, the discussion about the suburban issues, declining enrollment, facilities in the metropolitan area, operating budgets. I mean, all of those are really fairly complex and big issues, and yet we have to kind of deal with them. Senator Olson.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, the request here is for a grant. So in other words, if you can get it past the bonding committee, it's the state is picking up the whole tab for the building. Now we have the maximum effort school loan, which allows we still have that operational too, don't we?
Yes, we do.
But now that does that require a referendum locally to participate, even though they're contributing to the extent that they can, but after a period of years, if they aren't able to do it, then that's forgiven. But now, Senator Saltzman has raised the lease idea. Is there room for a hybrid where it isn't all grant? It may not be some may not be in the same kind of circumstances that the very limited nature of where we have the maximum effort. But see, the lease aid to charter schools is not picking up 100% of the tab of the facility. They're still having to pay something. This is paying nothing. Is there something in between that those two kinds of programs that might be more palatable instead of the state picking up the whole tab for school facilities? So allowing some effort, but making it make it easier to accomplish a needed goal.
Let me just ask a question, and Mr. Nauman just gave me an idea that has Rushford School District gone through a review and
review and comment?
Comment?
Yes, we have.
And what was the outcome of that?
The recommendation, we were working with ICS consulting firm, and that was presented to Commissioner Segrin, and we have not heard back at this time from them as to what their response was to it. We also have Mr. Ryberg involved with who's in charge of facilities, and those individuals met with him yesterday to consult over the review and comment.
So and that's generally the first process that school districts go through to address their facility needs, is that review and comment, and then obviously the referendum is a big part of it too, is what part of it that are you going to put to the voters in that district. And then of course the equalization aid, the debt service equalization aid, how much of it will the state put in and how much will the local taxpayers put in. So those are all key issues. In the case here, there's actually another facet, and that is what component will the flood have on either FEMA, the federal agency, or the state through the bonding that we already have appropriated. How much will that contribute to the facility? And in the case, if I understand you correctly, there wasn't a significant amount of flood damage to have the whole school rebuilt. In the case of East Grand Forks, they actually ended up with two new school buildings up there, but both of the buildings were significantly damaged because of the way the flood was up there. But I think that it's a good time to do something, because you hate to spend a lot of money repairing something if the school building is going to be outdated anyway. So,
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely right. And if I may just follow up with a couple of items here before we bring this to closure. First of all, we are here asking for a $20 million loan, which we would go to our voters and ask for an additional $5 million.
This is bond.
So, excuse me, $20 million bond. Thank you. I apologize. I'm still new to this. The other concern that we have for our facilities is that, as I clearly pointed out in my presentation earlier, is that the buildings are simply not functional at this point anymore. Let me give you a current example. Before I left school yesterday, I was going through my mail, and we received our heating cost bill for last month. For the buildings in Rushford, this does not include our middle school building, it was in excess of $16,000 to heat our building for 1 month. Simply unacceptable. As a school district and as the financial officer for our school district, you can imagine the burden that puts on us as a district. Also, the other thing I'd just like to point out to you, Tri-County Electric, after the disaster, has moved forward and is constructing a $7 million new facility just outside the community of Rushford. Their CEO, Brian Cranbier, has visited with me on previous occasions, prior to the flood even, and we had ongoing discussions about the need for new facilities. In order for him to attract new employees to his business and to that organization, they do look at the schools, and he has lost potential employees because of our current facilities.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe Mr. Nauman. You talked a little bit earlier about this cooperative facility grant. We changed it a couple years ago to be $20 million. What was the original purpose of the cooperative facility grant program? What was it designed to do?
Senator Hahn, it goes back to, I think in the late 80s, there was a conference committee that was meeting, and there were, I think, four or five districts in the west central part of the state, out by Wheaton and in that area. And it was an encouragement. All of the districts were small, and they were all wanted their schools, but they just couldn't quite get together. So it really was an encouragement to bring those schools together, and they actually built, the proposal was to build a new school, and then all of those districts would combine and go to that school, which was actually located out in the country. And I believe Senator or Representative Glenn Anderson was the one that came with that proposal. And that was put into the bonding bill back then. And then it kind of disappeared. There wasn't kind of an ongoing request, I believe, for that particular program.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, so was the original intent then to try to facilitate a consolidation of smaller districts into one sort of building that would serve several geographical school districts, and so there was a need to find a way to do that that was maybe more regionally based rather than district-based? And I'm just wondering how this particular proposal fits with that original intent of the program. Are we talking about changing that? I mean, in some ways it sounds as if what we're contemplating is finding a way to fund buildings in independent school districts, and I'm a little concerned that if we start to go down that path, why wouldn't other school districts come and say, we should be able to participate in this as well? And how do we differentiate and say this is appropriate and this one isn't? What I'm just trying to get a sense of what we're contemplating here and how what kind of future implications that might have.
Senator Hahn, I don't think there was any defined legislation or mission back then. I think it was more a way to kind of solve a problem, a particular kind of a problem. There was other attempts that you know, where you try to encourage school districts to participate, and the cooperation and consolidation. Back then, you couldn't use the word consolidate. Now it's not quite so bad, but that was really a no-no back then. I think the you're right. It's, you know, what could this evolve into? Yeah, it's all controlled by, you know, what the legislature wants to put money into. But I think we need to look at the problems out there and try to figure out how do we provide facilities in communities and provide educational opportunities and come up with programs. We need to periodically update some of that stuff. Property taxes, I can remember back in the 80s, property taxes was a very, very big issue. And they had gotten totally out of hand. I think passing referendums right now is a problem for many districts. And we need to take a look at that and figure out how do we address it. Maybe you have some more information on that.
Mr. Trim, no, I think your information on that was fine. I just wanted to add an additional thought that was sort of parenthetical to what Senator Hahn was getting at. I mean, I do think that in some respects we are at a kind of a threshold moment in terms of the debt service equalization program. We're getting school districts that are coming to this committee trying to use financing mechanisms that we don't traditionally see because the equalization on, in my opinion, because the equalization on the debt service programs has gone to a point where some of these districts are beginning to feel that we've got building needs, but we can't get equalization. And so the tax burden would be so high. We've allowed the formulas to, in a sense, degrade. And maybe the legislature is at a moment where we're saying these facilities should be paid for locally, and equalization is not something that the state wants to put in going forward. Or maybe we need to look at that. But we are at a moment where districts are beginning to use these alternative ideas, if you will, because the existing formulas are not working for them anymore.
Okay. Let me see who else. Oh, Senator Anderson.
Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On a totally different point. Hi. I don't know where that came from.
She's refreshing.
I've been in a different zone, I guess, here. Sorry about that. Believe it or not, I've served in the Senate for quite a long time. Superintendent, I just wanted to respond to what you said earlier about your heating costs. And you said $16,000, which is absolutely incredible. I've worked pretty hard to try to get bonding projects to look at all of the new building projects, to look at using, you know, the very highest energy efficiency standards as well as renewable sources of energy. And I think I would encourage you, if you haven't already, to look at solar thermal. If you can incorporate that into your new building and be able to finance it, it will pay for itself so quickly that it would really save you a lot in heating costs. In a very short, you know, less than 10 years, you'd be reducing your heating costs dramatically.
Senator Anderson, thank you. Yes, we've looked at geothermal already as well as solar energy, and the new facility would face southwest in a direction where we can take advantage of all of those things that are out there. And we would be looking at, if we're fortunate enough to move forward, is building a green facility, taking advantage of all of those things that are currently out there on the market.
Thank you.
Okay. I think, members, what we need to do is to kind of wrap this up. It will be a recommendation from the committee, and it'll go to the Capital Investment Committee. And that's what we're asking for here. Senator...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Morgan.
Hi. That's right. You got Wigger, you got Morgan. It's tough, I know. Mr. Chair, I was just thinking about what Senator Hahn and actually Eric Nauman had said, and I know that some of these school districts have some really tough scenarios to deal with. I know that because several of the bond issues – all but one of the levies in my district deal, and some of them for schools that have the maximum number of portables already. But when we look at this stuff, I'd like to just offer the opinion that I hate to see us start kind of zinging off in every different direction trying to fill a school district's needs instead of taking a very practical approach in looking at what we have and making it work better, or if what we have is totally obsolete, then doing something different. But I think the message that I'd like to bring is uniformity, because if we don't stay uniform, we're going to get in a position of every single year at this committee and other committees, it's going to be very political which school district gets what, instead of a practical approach that fits statewide. So I really hate to see us just start singing off in all different directions, one district at a time.
All right, Senator Ropes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one final comment, sort of in response to Senator Wirga and Senator Hahn's question about creating a new pathway that school districts will be rushing towards. I think that is a question that this committee and other health or education committees will have to struggle with. However, in this particular situation, I think there's some extreme hardship that sets us aside of many of their communities across the state who try to pass referendums and fail and fail and fail. And I live in Winona, and we have done that for years, just had failure after failure after failure. However, Rushford-Peterson is a consolidated district itself. It's very small, and the citizens of this community, many of them, have lost their home, still owe that mortgage to the bank, have gotten refinanced, are trying to do reconstruction, and are trying to do the right thing and pay off an old mortgage on a house that floated down the river, as well as rebuild a new home. So this is the population we're going to ask for an additional $5 million. And to your question, Senator Olson, earlier, we do have community buy-in, and we still have to pass a referendum down there. We're asking the state for $20 million, and that's the bulk, certainly, of this project. We do have local ownership, and that we have to ask these people that are struggling with two mortgages now and one lost home for $5 million. And that's going to be a tough sell on its own. I think this situation puts us in extraordinarily different situation from communities who simply can't pass referendums. And I would ask this committee to consider that we are not opening the floodgate, literally, for districts to be rushing to the state to circumvent voter will and ask the state to fund their schools. This is an extraordinary situation.
Senator Ropes, I definitely have sympathy for that because I've seen that happen in a number of my communities up in the valley, and you always end up losing in a disaster like that. Even with all the programs that exist, you always end up going backwards. And many people took their retirement and had to invest that. People ended up in bankruptcy. I mean, it was just it's a disaster is what it is. So I can definitely sympathize with you.
Yeah.
So what else? Should we entertain a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move this. I've been down there several times, and you know, I think that this was hard before the flood hit, and I certainly respect Senator Wergen's comments. In the broader scheme of things, we probably do need to figure something out. I also know, though, what plight these folks are in and what the school district's trying to do in terms of moving forward in a real positive way in the future. And I do think if we can figure out how to best handle this, it's a good thing, keeping everything, all the good comments in mind.
Senator Clark moves, and again, members, this is just a recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee that Senate File 2921. Had any amendments?
Nope.
Be re-referred to the Capital Investment Committee for consideration in the bonding bill. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Ropes and Superintendent and others.
Mr. Chairman and members of the Early Childhood through 12th Grade Committee here, thank you this morning for your attention, and we certainly appreciate your support here for this effort. Thank you again.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members.
Just go through the documents. Now, what we have two proposals that relate to the Permanent School Trust Fund. And these were heard in Senator Wieger's committee. And one of the proposals, I should have put both of them on the table. I think, Senator Wieger, why don't you just explain both of those proposals, whichever you want to start with, and then lay it out for the committee members, and we'll take it from there. Senator Wieger? Oh, I'm sorry. Before you start, Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair, members, I just thought I would highlight a few documents that we have in front of us as this is being talked about. This is one of our less than traditional financing mechanisms. So there's going to be some new concepts here. We have a flow chart in your packet that shows how the dollars flow from the permanent school trust fund lands and eventually end up in schools or don't end up in schools, as the case may be. Then there is, because these issues came up in the policy committee, a document that shows all the relevant constitutional and statutory language. There may be points where we want to reference those, and that's this document. The consolidated fund balance statement for the November forecast is also included. That shows the finances and the dollars that are available. And then finally, there is a, as we talk through this, there is a data run that was prepared by House Research that shows the distribution of dollars if the subtraction is eliminated, and that's something we're going to talk about, is the elimination of the subtraction. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Nauman. Senator Wieger.
Yes. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, division members. Recognizing that half of you as policy members have heard the presentation, I'll try to cut to the chase, and that is this. The roots of these proposals are in the 19th century, that being when the federal government had delivered lands across America to states in trust. It was to be used for school purposes. So millions of acres of land across America by the federal government to states to be used in trust for the public schools. Minnesota, it's in the Constitution, permanent school fund. Right now, about 2.25 million acres left. Money that is raised from the lands, primarily through minerals, timber, but up in the northern part of the state, that fund, it is permanent, and there's over $600 million, as you can see in that spreadsheet. It's managed by the Board of Investment, also has an oversight committee. And the interest earnings are close to $25 million. What we're talking about in both proposals is the earnings in that fund. Let's round it at $25 million. That should go to the school districts. And it goes now, but it is subtracted at the end. And you could call that hypocritical or disingenuous. I'm saying let's correct that by keeping those funds where the federal government, where the constitutional framers and others, I believe, intended the money to stay with the public schools. One bill is very simple. It just says we're not going to subtract it. The money stays with the schools. And there's a spreadsheet showing what that means for your district. Another bill does that, but also would dedicate that money to technology. The reason for technology was that there's a need, and it puts a face on the program. Others have suggested other purposes. That's up to you, but we wanted to provide a choice in there as an option. So with that background, Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to have Ray Schwab give an overview. The School Boards Association recently discussed this at their delegate assembly, took a strong position in support. We'll follow with Mary Saccone.
Welcome, Ms. Schwab.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. It is a pleasure to be with you today. I'm going to talk about something that's probably one of the most neglected school topics around for funding and present you with an incredible opportunity for the children of Minnesota. School trust fund lands are something, as Senator Wieger alluded to, that the federal government made pacts for. The U.S. has about 45 million acres left for about $38 billion in permanent school trust fund. If you look at Minnesota's portion, we have about 2.5 million in land acres and an additional 1 million in mineral resources with about $635 million that is held in trust for the children of Minnesota. Grants were done as we became a state. It was like a pact we made with the federal government saying we wouldn't tax all the federal lands that the feds wanted to sell, and they in turn would give us parcels for public schools. Minnesota was one of the newer states to become a state, and so we received two parcels, not just one, along with the other states that are listed on here. The 16th and 36th parcel of every township in the state of Minnesota was given for the purpose of supporting public schools. But the problem these days is this seems to be a secret. And we've heard different bills over the last 5 or 6 years. They float in, they float out. We hear a little bit here and there. But the connection never really goes around. And it really started this summer on a summer lands tour. We had senators and representatives part of the lands tours. We actually went out and looked at these lands. And from that, I came away from feeling very strongly that this is an opportunity and took it to my delegates who also felt the same way. Here's what Minnesota School Trust Fund's lands look like. They're scattered around the state. The black would be the mining revenues and the red being the trust land revenue. Once again, these were a pact we made with the federal government, and our role as a state is when we accepted these lands in trust for the public schools, you accepted the role as a trustee. Now, what does a trustee do? They're really acting as the same way as a bank trustee would do. Basically, as a state, you manage for the exclusive benefit of the beneficiary. You return full value for use and disposition, maintain undivided loyalty to the beneficiary, and might not use the asset to pursue other goals. This is what the DNR does and just gives you a feel about sometimes how it relates in Minnesota. We should use reasonable care and skill. We should acquire assets and protect the property. And these are questions they ask. And this has more to do with Senator Lynch's management of the school trust fund bills. And I really want to compliment Senator Wieger and his dedication because it's really a two-pronged attack. The first thing we need to do is make those lands and those revenues part of the K-12 fund. And the second is to improve the management, because in the end, that could bring us growth within our K-12 funds that we don't have to tax people for and we don't have to take out of other programs. So it's really capturing the growth from better management and bringing them in. Revenues from the permanent fund, as Eric said, are not spent but deposited into an account, and it's the interest from those accounts that you see on the runs provided for you. But we've got a problem in Minnesota. Our trust fund dollars go into our K-12 bucket and flow right out immediately to the state of Minnesota. These bills would fix that hole. Giving you an idea about what kind of revenues and expenditures the trust fund lands do, here's a map from 02 to 07 about the productivity of the gross revenues, the blue line being the gross revenue. The net is what your school districts have seen in increased payments, and the yellow being DNR costs going forward. This gives you a feeling of the potential growth. Every year this fund, that they could make more money or deposit more money, is an opportunity for schools to get more dollars into their cash. Once again, a look at DNR costs, and this is really, once again, the management of those funds. If they improve, that's a two-pronged attack. So what kind of costs are included in here? And that's for, you can look at that on your own leisure. But let's talk about what they could be. What could the future look like? The DNR manages both the K-12 and the University Trust Fund. The University Trust Fund was set up similarly to K-12 through the federal government. The really good thing that this graph shows is that our university funds bring about $150 an acre revenue to the University of Minnesota. Listen to me. It doesn't go into the state general fund. It actually goes to the University of Minnesota. So it would be wonderful if we could include that same kind of guarantee the university funds get for K-12. Presently, K-12 generates about $3.16. So my point, members, is we may be low now, but the potential for growth in this area through mining and forestry and renewable resources is so great. It's the growth from where we are now to where we could be.
Senator Olson,
is that accurate? It's only you said that the in the permanent school trust fund it's $3.16 an acre of mineral revenues.
Of mineral. That's just it's a minerals comparison. The university controls with minerals about 100,000 acres. If you do the K-12 side, we have 3.5 million acres. And if you look at documents from the DNR, we're about $2 million behind the University Trust Fund in mineral revenues.
So it's just mineral revenues that you were comparing?
Exactly,
there.
And it was on a per-acre amount. So it talks about really where I think we could go and where the DNR has taken people in Minnesota.
Ms. Schraub, how come the huge disparity there?
Senator Stumpf, I don't know if I'm the right person to answer that question. It's an unusual finding. I think you can say maybe the lands are better in some, and you can say we are now paying for our mineral costs, so that might impact it slightly. But there's a huge difference there, and I just think it talks about potential. This state is full of potential.
But the university, I'm sure, must pay for somebody to manage the lands as well.
The DNR uses the same management team for our lands as the university lands.
And yet we get $3 an acre and they get 150?
Partly because we have so many acres of mineral and forest. And the university has a relatively small amount when compared to that.
Mr. Chairman, are you averaging the mineral resources over all of the lands that are non-mineral then?
All, it's just a straight acre-to-acre comparison.
Of total acres, but only measuring the mineral resources against
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Well,
for
that's
both.
Not a fair comparison.
But if we got the same revenues off of all of the acres, we'd have a nice pile of money.
But Mr. Chairman, we don't. All of our acres aren't in minerals. But the fair comparison would be, are they getting more per acre off from their mineral lands than we are getting off from our mineral lands?
That'd be another comparison, yeah.
That's another comparison. But, you know, obviously ours are spread. I don't know what – I'm not sure where the university's lands – were they sections of each township also? Or were they consolidated or concentrated in some areas more than others? We've managed to concentrate a bit more as lands have been sold and traded and that kind of thing. And you know, wish we could get more mineral because that's where the return is. But, you know, the part of the management that was, for those of you, well, I guess there weren't too many that were on that tour, and that was really very interesting to see. For example, there's some of ours that are old growth forests that you can't touch and do anything. You're not getting anything out of it. Well, if there ought to be, that's not right to put school trust fund lands in old growth forests. Either find some way to compensate for that preservation or trade it for something that will be revenue producing. So there's a lot of things that we've got going that in the management part, but I'm not sure that this makes sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me to apply our mineral revenues against all of the acreage we have.
Senator Roebling?
Of course, 150 years ago, they may not have been such old growth forests yet when this was established. But, you know, in the higher ed committee, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, we actually had a bill to increase funding for management of the university lands. And it is done through the DNR, but it was to give the DNR additional revenue to manage university holdings or trust lands.
And they
were pushing to get more per acre as well. And I do believe we did increase that allotment some. And there was good prospects in doing that. We had a whole presentation on it. And, you know, it's something certainly we can look at. But not all lands will produce equally, that's for sure.
Well, but Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
That shows a disparity right there, that if the state pick up the tab separately for the management of those lands, the management of the permanent school trust fund lands are coming out of the revenues of the earnings, and that's reducing the amount that's going back to the schools. So that was a different investment. And then not only that, then we subtract it from what we put in, from our general revenue.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, it was coming out of the higher ed budget. So it's, you know, the way we have pockets of money around here does make a difference.
Did Senator
say hi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Schwab, I do recognize there are some discrepancies. We've got huge chunks of state school trust lands in the boundary waters, a one particular that And what we're looking for here is ways to manage our lands so that we can add value to them. Land exchanges, as Senator Olson mentioned, is one. And we're working on legislation this year to make it easier for county and state lands to be exchanged. We call that the low-hanging fruit. Eventually, you know, we'd like to work on an exchange which would maybe we could trade the federal government for those lands and add to the income. But you're exactly right. It's those lands could be managed in a much better way. And Minnesota could generally is working on managing its forest lands in a much better way. And so that's a good point.
I had a question on the there's a couple counties in the state of Minnesota that are unorganized, and I think Senator Saxhog has one, and I have one. No, maybe you have both of them. Was the division of an unorganized county, did that have permanent school trust fund land in them too? Maybe.
Senator Stumpf, I'm not the one to answer that question. I could certainly look into this. This has been a long research project going back to our history and our statehood that I found fascinating over time, but I'd be happy to follow up on that.
Well, does Lake of the Woods and Couchiching County have townships?
Mr. Chairman, both Couchiching and Lake of the Woods do not have townships, but in the case of Couchiching, that was something that was done after.
They had townships.
It's been done the last 40 years.
Okay,
and they eliminated their township governments. And
Lake of the Woods never had
townships. They never have.
That's when you look at that map and there's no school trust fund land in that Lake of the Woods area, that's the reason, is that no townships. Senator Hamm?
thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think as we heard in the policy committee, I think there's sort of two issues here that we're wrestling with. One is the effective management of the lands that the state has, and I think there are legitimate questions that are being raised, and I think the slide points it out that however we compare them, it doesn't seem as if we may be doing as well as we could in managing this 3 million acres of rights that the school trust fund would have, and I think that's the focus of some other legislation to see if we can get a better handle on that and try to maximize the returns or do things that make sense to focus on generating revenue. But the point of it, I think, of what we're wrestling here with today is just to say, whatever those funds are, how are we going to deal with them? Are we going to dedicate them to education and make sure they go where they were intended? Or do we continue to do what we're doing today, which is we kind of take it in and then we pull it out? And I think that, from my perspective, putting it into the education fund would bring a higher focus to what is that generating. And it may help on the other side of saying, can we do a better job of managing those things? So I think, as I've heard this, there's a lot of questions. I don't know what the answers are yet. I think we need to get some work with the DNR and how we're structured to manage this. My gut is that we can do better. I don't know if we can get to the $150 an acre for every parcel of land that we have, but we could probably do better than $3, as we need to work on going forward. But I think as a first step, it makes sense to say, let's take the monies we get and dedicate them to this education fund and make sure that they end up there and bring some higher focus to this.
Senator Salzman.
If Ms. Schwab could go back a few slides to where you showed the revenue with the three colors.
I'm not sure. I'm going the wrong way. This is not my computer, so.
Well, I think the point I saw was that the revenue went up, the management fees went up as well, and so there was not, for the last few years, any net gain. And I think that goes to the fact. And I think that, you know, for those of us who went on the tour, I think Senator Olson and Lynch and Weger were there from the Senate. I'm hoping I haven't missed anybody. The first thing that came to mind as we became aware of this was that issue of, if we were more aware of this, if it wasn't in a separate fund. So to your point, Senator Hahn, having it very visible would be very helpful for us to keep track of it. And I think that's some of this discussion. You can see right here where, if I'm reading all of this right,
the
see that.
could see it before. Now I can't read the small print.
The blue.
But you look at where the management fees go up pretty much in a proportion to, like, the revenue coming off the land. And that's where I think Senator Lynch's bill is very important. It's not that we don't believe the DNR is doing a good job, but we had so many questions that to not be able to address that and make sure that we're being responsible in the management. I'm looking at some of the initiatives that are coming forward right now from, you know, our energy committees, environment. How these lands might be used differently is very, very important. So I just think this is a very good discussion.
I think our responsibility here, though, is just to decide whether we want the dollars to go back into education and eliminate that subtraction. And then the difference between the two bills is, if you do that, do you put it out there for education in general so that the districts can decide how to spend it, or do you put it into technology and give them some guidance there? Senator Culp.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, Senator Wieger and the presenters, I would just have to say this is totally coming brand new to me, and I'm following everything. So congratulations. I think your presentation has been very effective. I think it's an interesting subject that I've never heard before, and I've got it. So two things. I guess I'd like to express a preference, first of all, for one of the bills, if I could. I'll get that in. I guess I understand trying to put a face on it with the technology piece, and I know that a lot of schools need technology, but I guess if I had to choose, I might go with the simpler proposal of just simply giving it back to the schools, kind of a local control idea, and you know, let the schools use it as they see fit. But then the second question, I guess, is maybe for the chair or for Mr. Nauman. But, you know, obviously then this money is going directly to the general fund. So there's the hole in that bucket. am I following that correctly? I guess.
Mr. Chair, Senator Koch, you are following this correctly. It might be helpful to look at this document, and then I'll sort of go through this. We went through this in the policy committee, so I apologize for doing this twice for some of you. The idea here is that the box on the top is the permanent school trust fund lands. That's the lands that we own. And if we sell the land, or if it generates revenue for land through land sales or mineral rights, that generates cash, which is then deposited in the permanent school trust fund, which is managed by the State Board of Investment. Any investments off of those earnings, minus a few accounting calculations, which we love to do at the state for a variety of reasons we can get into, but the bulk of the money then goes to districts. And back in 1971, as part of the Minnesota Miracle legislation, we created a subtraction. So any dollar that goes in, a dollar comes off. So school districts are getting money from the general fund. We're getting some money from the permanent school trust fund, but we're making a subtraction off. So the bills before you, you've identified, do in fact, in view, I suppose, remedy that subtraction. The issue then becomes for you to think about, if you had a dollar, but it does carry a general fund cost to do that. In theory, you could leave it as is, and the general fund would be a little bit larger, and assumingly, maybe that would be revenues that would be available to this committee to distribute based on target solutions that are made at the state level. Or maybe your view is that's not what would happen, and you'd rather make that decision right now to sever it. Projections, I understand, for the DNR or from the State Board of Investment are that this will grow over time, which would not projections are for larger investment earnings. So in theory, you might think that this is a good deal to eliminate the subtraction because it has some built-in growth in it. So I think those are the issues before you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What is the basis, Mr. Nauman, for determining how this is allocated between school districts? Is it on a per pupil or value? Or what's the distribution?
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the way this works is it's based on whatever the dollar amount that is distributed is then divided by the prior year's ADM count. So what you're seeing here is I think the House has put together the earnings from, it looks like, fiscal 07, and then they divide it by the resident ADM counts for the prior year. So you get a fairly even distribution. That's why it's not completely even, but we're separating around $31 to $29 per pupil. So you don't get the distortions that you would get off of a weighted formula allowance, for example.
I think that's Senator good, Olson. Mr. Chairman. I think that is good, and we ought to leave it that way. I understand the struggle between, you know, dedicating to a specific use. I wish there was a way that we without imposing a mandate, but that they receive that it is separate, and yet they have a responsibility to communicate how they've used it, so that it's not just the black hole that it becomes if it's a part of our distribution. The same is true within their own general fund. And I think they could use it as a PR thing, but calling attention also to this particular revenue stream if they indicated what priorities that they placed on using these permanent school trust funds lands without having to for us to tell them exactly how they had to do it.
Is there an innocuous way of doing that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure there was a question in there, Senator Olson, but I did take the opportunity between the two meetings to visit with Dr. Melcher a little bit, because while he doesn't go back to 1971, he could at least speculate about what the legislature may have been thinking at that time. His thought was, given some of the dynamics at the time that was going on with the Minnesota Miracle, that perhaps the legislature was thinking that we should be paying for education on the same pupil base. So what you would end up with here is another pupil base that we would be using, a lagging prior year ADM count that you would get some dollars off of, and then the bulk of your money comes off of a different pupil base. And I think he was speculating that perhaps the legislature was thinking that at that time we should have a uniform system of paying for school so it's less confusing. I'm not sure complexity is something that we're really – I know it's a goal that we'd like to reduce some of the complexity, but I think we're already using this pupil base for other purposes. So I'm not sure that's a valid concern today, but perhaps it is.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to go back to the comments that Senator Cope made. I agree with her. I'm in Paris 2422, and Senator also made the same comments with respect to the language in 2392. I'm particularly concerned about the word only, because it does say in 1.9 that the school will receive the school endowment fund revenue, may use the revenue only for technology, and then it goes into that. And I would like to suggest to the authors that we delete the word only. I don't know if these two pieces are going to move together, but I do believe that this is a limitation that we shouldn't impose. And they may use it for technical computers and all of these things, but I think the word only is very limited, and I would like to ask the author if he would be willing to.
Senator Salzma. Okay, thank you, Senator President. Senator Salzma.
I would argue that if we just do the bill that that removes the subtraction and we don't tie it to something, and we can certainly talk about that, I think that over time it's just going to be money for schools and we'll be right back where we are, sort of like what's the total amount going to our schools, as opposed to looking at when this program was initially created. And then we look at today, 150 years later, or, you know, plus some, what's going on in our society? What are challenges that we have? We hear about Minnesota being 49th in terms of technology. We hear about STEM areas. I know that this last year when the conference committee report was being prepared and we had the one-time money, I talked to Senator Clark about we target that to STEM initiatives. The way it came out, it was for, you know, equipment or, like, you know, curriculum. But to look at where some areas that our schools are arguing we aren't investing. And I obviously understand local control, but I think in this particular instance, the fact we have this pool of money to give it some sort of spotlight to look at how we could target this. And maybe it's beyond just the technology. Maybe it's curriculum purpose. But it's beyond just general operating funds. Because I think that in some states, schools, and Ken Olson's point was that schools apply for a grant, and they basically apply to the state for their funds, and they're all able to receive funds, but they specifically map out what is it that we're going to use these funds for. So again, we can sort of point to this and say that these are school trust fund lands, and it keeps the pressure on us to make sure that this fund grows as much as it can. But that's where I think I would prefer to see us target it to something, or to be able to document how it's used would be very helpful.
All right, we have a couple questions, and then we want to hear from Ms. Zaccone. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Senator Salzman that, and I'd use the analogy of the University Trust Fund. When they get their funds, actually, this happened about 20 years ago. They decided to put a program into effect where private donors would be matched by the university trust funds and would endow chairs at the University of Minnesota. And they started out with 14 in 1990 and are now well over 400, mostly in the College of Medicine and Institute of Technology. Of course, that's bringing on more income is helping the University of Minnesota, and it isn't just being spent for education, not that that's not important, but I mean, the point being is kind of what you're saying, Senator Salzman, that I think it's important that it have an effect, a lasting effect, if we can do it.
Okay, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two observations. One is going back to Mr. Nauman's comments and from Senator Koch's question. I think it's important that we recognize that if we dedicate these trust fund dollars to education, it doesn't necessarily mean an increase in funding. We need to be clear about that. What we're saying is we're going to dedicate those funds, but if we could end up putting a hole in the general fund dollars, but it doesn't have to be that way. And so I just want to caution us to say let's not look at this, at least in the short term, as just an increase. It's what we're doing is we're just trying to bring some clarity to this. It may result in increase, but it may be revenue neutral, I guess, in one sense, if you say we'll take the general fund dollars and reserve them to plug that hole that we're creating by transferring the trust fund land dollars to that account. But the second observation, I guess I would say, just in the debate about the two versions of the bill, and I agree with Senator Torres Ray, I'm a little concerned about here in the Senate or in the legislature trying to dedicate these funds for a particular purpose. We know a lot of districts have technology funds that they've already dedicated. Some districts have raised levies and other things dedicated to that purpose. And I'm concerned that if we put this mandate out there to say you must spend the money for this purpose, then you create what will be, in effect, an accounting shift where districts will say, all right, well, now we're going to move money from here to here and we'll show compliance by meeting this target, but it doesn't really change anything that they may be doing at the local level. I came from a school board. I think we elect people at the local school district level to make these decisions. The dollars are fungible. Let's let the discretion rest with the districts there to say how best to use these monies effectively. So to me, the least restrictive dedication of these funds would be preferable, but Senator Wigger is the author of both bills, so he's of a divided mind apparently himself on what's the best way to go. So, but that's just right.
Mr. Chair, again, I wanted to provide some
Senator
options.
Wigger.
But
why don't we finish our testimony? And then I think, members, the options that we would have if the committee decides to adopt one bill or some modification of it would be to lay it on the table for possible inclusion in the education bill. So, Ms. Zaccone.
Zaccone, it's hard. Mr. Chair, members, Mary Zaccone with Parents United for Public Schools. I want to thank Senator Wigger and Ms. Schwab for bringing this forward. It's always a pleasure to actually testify for increasing monies to schools. That's really terrific. And I actually believe the potential for these lands and the revenue from these lands is great, especially if we can deal with the oversight and management issue. I know the temptation is really great, and Senator Saltzman makes a very solid point about dedicating the dollars because the attention is there. But I would like to share the cautionary tale from Stillwater, where in the mid-90s, when the legislature granted appropriated dollars to school districts specifically for technology, Stillwater did just what they were told to do and bought a lot of hardware. They did not have the dollars, however, to do the staff development or actually even use the hardware. And it became just a PR nightmare, especially as we move forward to try and get levies passed, because we gave the impression that our school board had absolutely no idea what they were doing. And those big black screens called computer monitors hung around the school district for a couple of years and still remains an issue. So I really believe that it's important. I agree with Senator Olson, and I do believe that local school boards need to stand and deliver, and I think this gives them a great opportunity to say, these were extra funds that our legislature granted us this year, and this is how we in X district are going to use that. I think that's absolutely appropriate. And I would just wonder, and maybe I dream too much, but the day that we can stabilize the funding formula, because right now it's a rare district that's not cutting, if we can stabilize the funding formula, I think that's a really appropriate time to then dedicate these funds very specifically. So I would hope that that might be a compromise. Thank you for taking this bill up. It's very important.
Yeah. Thank you for your testimony. Senator Wieger, any comments or what would the author like to do?
Well, Mr. Chair, division members, thank you for your discussion, and I think we all agree that funds should not be subtracted. So we build from that. Some would say there should be total discretion by the district. Others would dedicate. I would say the majority might be suggesting what Senator Olson recommended, where there be some type of report back, not a detailed report, but something that shows how the funds are being used. And we also have an excellent presentation on Utah where they do just that. The schools show that with little expense. They show how the money's being done. We want to show that return on investment. So maybe we could develop some language on that type of recommendation over the next few weeks. And that would be my suggestion, that we have these moved ahead, and I guess
which
you would
one?
Lay them over.
Okay. We will have an opportunity to get some of what Senator Lynch's proposal tries to address, which is kind of the maximizing effort of those permanent school trust funds lands. And if I heard Senator Wieger correctly, you would like to move the bill that just allows the Senate File 2422. Was that your intent?
We're almost there, but I take some advice.
All right,
others,
Senator
that
Saltzman.
Would like to see what how we develop this.
Mr. Chair, if I could suggest to Wieger that maybe somebody would like to work with him on this compromise, where, as I had mentioned earlier, that some states also do have to report in, and I'm not, you know, suggesting just technology, because I think our school districts since 1992 have learned a lot about technology, but to look at some sort of documentation. So, because my concern is that if we just go with 2422, I'm not sure that we're going to move forward with really keeping this money in some way separate, so that we can sort of keep an eye on it and see what it's being used for. So I would like to suggest that there be some language, that there be some way to track this, how it's being used, or to look at some more, some broader uses, perhaps.
Maybe Senator Wieger and Senator Saltzman and others who might be interested, you might visit with the Senate staff. They have some ideas that they can. Senator Anderson and Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to weigh in support of 2422. I'm going to have to agree with Senator Hann and with Ms. Ciccone, though. My district is, or the City of St. Paul district, I just learned yesterday they're facing a $10 million deficit right now. I mean, we're in a hole, and as much as I agree with you, Senator Saltzman, we've got to focus on technology. First, we've got to get out of the hole that we're in. So I support this. I think, realistically, we were trying to figure out what the actual fiscal impact is. It looks like it's $19 million a year that is subtracted. Is that more
Mr. Nauman,
right?
Mr. Chairman, and that's a good point.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think it might be helpful to look at this tracking sheet. I can call your attention to a line that, as far as the November forecast was concerned, represents the cost to the general fund if you were to adopt either of these bills. And what I'm looking at is under actual and estimated uses, the total expenditures line. So, members should keep in mind that there is a 90-10 payment schedule, so this would represent the entitlement if you were to adopt this. But the line that shows total expenditures as in terms of the the subtotal education, K-12 education, would be the cost. So roughly in 2008, it would be $27.3 million, $27.9 million, $29.7 moving forward.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Senator just Anderson. Finish that thought. I appreciate the information. And I'm just going to suggest maybe we should look at, because we're just going to start, when we get our forecast this week, figuring out this very difficult deficit problem that we're in. And maybe a way to do this would be to phase it in over time, while at the same time we work on a really aggressive management plan to increase revenue. So as we move, so it gives us a lot of hope that the trajectory would be in an upward direction for education funding. So just an idea to think about.
Senator Anderson, I was hoping that we might be able to pass this thing out before we get the next forecast.
Okay, let's go.
Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate File 2422 be recommended to pass. And would it be?
And Senator Wigger, I assume that you'd be open with, Senator Saltzman to work out some.
Yes, we'll have an amendment that would hopefully take advantage of some of the ideas that have been advanced, and also be sensitive to local control and the reality that we are facing deficits in many districts.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I cop out might be to put them both on the table and work on it, but I think you can either one you can work with, and it appears that we're going to be making some change. So I think it doesn't rule out doing something more with the one. I was kind of intrigued by Senator Saxhog's comment and wondering, and I don't know if there's a legal thing, but that could allow the school districts to use a portion or all of their allocation as leverage for matching from local contributions for specific purposes. And it may maybe some districts would be at a disadvantage of being able to draw that, but who knows? They aren't huge dollar amounts, and it wouldn't be that hard. If they could double it, why not? So, and be an interesting thing. If is that legal to do, or if we authorized that they are able to use that for leverage? Just throw that on the table for the mix when we get to trying to resolve something.
Senator Saxhog, and then we'll
and one final pitch, Mr. Chair, is
great
that
idea.
We talked about the management of forests and the increase in the income, and so there'll be a bill coming through Senator Anderson's committee to increase that management efficiency. So we'll be looking forward to that, too.
Right. All right. On Senator Wigger's motion to lay Senate File 2422 on the table, all those in favor, any discussion? I don't want to ignore the Department of Finance. Does the Department of Finance want to make any comments? Okay. All right. They wanted to assure us that this does cost money, which I think all of us realize, and Senator Olson's comments too about the forecast and stuff. So this discussion will continue, and I think all of us are aware of it. So, on Senator Wigger's motion, all those in favor all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator Wigger, and testimony. Tomorrow we have a hearing on general education. We have the Senator Saxhog's proposal on the formula and special ed, and then also the discussion on the Minnesota Promise, which was a booklet that was put together Mr. Kite and several others, and it's a little bit of a where should we be in, you know, in the future. So I think that'll be a good opportunity to kind of bring some ideas together. So that'll be tomorrow. Committee is adjourned.
Okay, thank you. 10:30.